Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the next session of this conference, which, as an enthusiastic consumer of wine, I am delighted to be able to participate in. My name is Patrick Worms, and I work for an institution called World Agroforestry and the Center for International Forestry Research. These are agroecological research institutions headquartered in Nairobi and in Bogor, Indonesia. I'm also vice president of the European Agroforestry Federation, and this session is going to delve into the issue of agroforestry and winemaking. We're going to be exploring what role, if any, trees can play in viticultural landscapes, what challenges and what opportunities winemakers see by introducing those trees into those landscapes, and more broadly, why, in the context of a planet whose climate is becoming increasingly unpredictable, having these trees might be a good idea in more ways than one. I'm joined in this conversation by Etel Igonet, and those of you who don't know her, you have missed something, because Etel is a force of nature. Etel has devoted her life and her passion to making key commodity supply chains more sustainable and more regenerative, and while most of us dream of doing that, she's actually done it. She's actually done more to transform the cocoa supply chain than most people I know, mostly by putting the fear of God under the into the hearts of those companies that seem to be focusing a little bit too much on the financial bottom line and not enough on the ecological bottom line. I'm also joined by Mathieu Meyer, who is from Chateau Galoupé, which is a LVMH property. And LVMH, of course, as we all know, is the world's largest luxury conglomerate. And so I'm sure that, Mathieu, you have very, very different approaches within the company on the whole issue of sustainability. And it'll be very interesting for us to understand how you see, from the perspective of the producer of a luxury good, the role that agroforestry can play, not only in improving your production systems, but perhaps also in marketing. And finally, with Nicolas Daspre from Terravitis in France. That's a producer, a production house in the Loire Valley, if I'm not mistaken. And so the issues that you're facing from a biophysical perspective are probably not very different from the ones that Mathieu is facing at Chateau Galoupé. But perhaps the marketing and the sustainability objectives might be slightly different. Let me perhaps start by asking Etel, why agroforestry generally? Why should we bother adding trees to landscapes? After all, monocultures are beautiful, aren't they?
Monocultures may be visually attractive, but to be honest, they're a disaster for Mother Earth. And not only does agroforestry provide a much better and more environmentally sound pathway for many commodities, including wine, but it can also really save wine. I think we often feel that monoculture is easier and cheaper and better, and it's what we sort of go to as a first approach in any commodity, including wine. But the truth is that climate change is not creeping up on us. It is running. It is racing. We are really heading towards a world with much more extreme temperature fluctuations. And actually, agroforestry is not just a sort of gift that icky freaky tree hugger, granola crunchy hippies can give to Mother Earth. Agroforestry is an investment that we can give so that the earth helps us have more sustainable wine for the long run. And you know, the benefits of agroforestry are legion. It's not just about biodiversity, which is good for the planet, but not particularly good for a vineyard's bottom line. It's not just about carbon sequestration, which may be something that the law will sort of stretch to encompass to hold businesses accountable for, but which right now is really something you just do for the planet. So it's not just biodiversity and carbon sequestration. What's important to know is that agroforestry can save your vines from extreme heat. It can save your vines from extreme cold. It can, do a huge amount of work to help your soil health and also to help increase the water retention, the soil water holding capability. But, you know, with wine, there's even more benefits. Things like
agroforestry is a tool, then. Agroforestry is a tool and not very different from an irrigation pump or a tractor. Mathieu, would you agree with that? Do you see your agroforestry trees as tools to help buffer climate extremes, to help increase the nutrition available to your grapes, and perhaps to change their qualities in order to get the wine you want?
Yeah, totally. It's a tool to improve the water retention of the soil, the resistance of the soil against the erosion. So it's a tool to have, I would say, a better quality crop and a crop which is more resistant to climate change, but also to pests, to the disease of the vines. And in addition to that, for me, it's also a great tool to further enhance the specificities of the terroir, which is right. Key in viticulture.
Tell us a little bit, when did you plant your trees? How big are they now? How are you measuring the impact they're having?
Not big like that.
Oh, I see. So this is aspirational.
We are super recent. The estate has been acquired by LVMH in 2019. So quite recently. Prior to that, it was regular viticulture. No agroforestry at all, no cover crop, no nothing. So as soon as we acquired it, we switched into organic conversion and will be fully certified this month, actually. And we also started to develop the agroforestry with three aspects, one being the cover crop. So we replanted massively between the rows of vines and the agroforestry as well, which is for us both a way to have habitats for the biodiversity, but also to have ways of circulation of life between the vines, but also between the vineyard parts of the estate and the forest part of the estate, because we have
LVMH took the decision. I mean, it's a significant investment. You have to change your management practices. You have to plant the trees. You have to protect them from wildlife when they're small.
You have to lose vines too, because trees is replacing vines. So, yeah.
Is that part of a broader strategy that LVMH is following in its vine properties, or are you a pioneer in some way?
No, we are not a pioneer in any of those stuff. Cover crop, a lot are doing that much better than us. Same for the agroforestry. And even within LVMH, Hennessy, they have a massive, in the cognac part of the business of LVMH, they have a massive trees plantation program. Ruinart in Champagne is doing the same. What is quite interesting at Chateau Galopet is more the configuration of the estate that we have, because we have our 69 hectares of vineyard in one block and 77 hectares of forest in one block as well, all of that being one organism, so to speak. So mm-hmm. We can really play around the all the impacts and all the aspects of agroforestry on the estates. And in that part, the 360 vision and application of the of those specs is quite interesting for us here.
And so would you say that from the perspective of the company, this is done mostly because of these very real biophysical effects that you have on your system, or because of the way it allows you to market a kinder, gentler version of winemaking?
It's a little bit of both, plus being like a vitrine, you know, a shelf for LVMH to showcase what can be done in the with the protection of the environment, and the viticulture durable. But for us also, once we acquired the estate, we oriented the whole vision of our marketing story of the who we are around the environment too, with the protection of the environment on the estate, but also with quite bold packaging decision to reduce our carbon impact within the packaging. So the whole DNA, I would say, of the brand is toward the environment, and agroforestry is definitely one of the main aspects. Personally, when I'm receiving press or visitors at the estate and I'm doing a tour, within a 1 hour of tour, I will be speaking about the nature for a good 50 minutes. And 10 minutes at the end is only the wine, and it's just flowing beautifully, because wine is just a consequence at the end of everything that we've been explaining before.
Music to my ears as an agroforester, of course. Nicolas, Terra Vitis, you are active mostly in central and northern France, as I understand it. And would you say that there too winemakers are beginning to recognize the benefits of agroforestry? And if so, how easily do they make the transition from their current production methods to these kinder, gentler production methods?
For Terra Vitis, we are not only in northern France. I work for the whole France. I would say that everyone is quite interested in agroforestry. First, because it's quite obvious that if you have trees, you have all the benefits that were discussed before, or you should have. But then the main problem is how I work mainly with relatively small wine growers, not really small, but the average is around 30 to 40 hectares. And they're not exactly as rich as LVMH, so it's quite a different context. And the main idea for them is there really something that will add to my production with agroforestry? And can I do it without too many problems? So first, we try to discuss with them what do you want to do with this? Most of the time, they want to enhance biodiversity, as it was discussed. Sometimes they want to improve the landscape, either because they liked what it was 50 years ago, and they are quite desperate because you don't have any tree in the 15 kilometers around.
I'd like to emphasize that point, not just in the vine-growing regions, but I've seen that time and time again in regions that have become very specialized in one or another form of agriculture. The older farmers are missing the way the landscape used to look. And the young farmers are sometimes encouraged to go towards agroforestry by aesthetic reasons, which they then justify by objective reasons and financial reasons. Would it be fair to say that this yearning for a more beautiful landscape, this yearning for aesthetics, is more prevalent in wine growers? Because after all, they're making a luxury product. They're making a product which is designed for the free times, for the good times, for the times with friends and family.
Probably, and also because a lot of them have tourism activities. So when you have people visiting, as Mathieu said, if you talk inside a dessert, it's not really attractive, even if it's wine. So it's much better if you have trees and you have a bit of shadow and you have birds and everything. You want the people to have the idea that wine comes from nature, not comes from something industrial. And right. Especially if you're quite a small family-run winery. So that's one of the reasons. The main would be probably biodiversity. And what we try to discuss with them is...
And biodiversity, is it from the perspective of they just want to hear more birds, or is it from the perspective of they want helpers to control pests of various kinds to provide ecosystem services?
It's both. It's first, you want functional biodiversity, but then you know that it's not very easy to say that you have to have this plant and it will solve all the problems. I guess you all know this very well. So you know that you have to enhance globally biodiversity, and then it should help to reduce problems. Then, of course, some species might be preferred to some others. And that's why what we try to discuss. And then we try to discuss, do you really need agroforestry as said, that is planting trees inside the plots? And as Mathieu said, you will lose wine. It's a bit more difficult to work with your mechanized tools. And it's quite difficult sometimes. And a lot of them have very small plots. So sometimes you just have to have more hedges, and the result will be quite similar, or the effects will be quite similar.
And hedges are, of course, a form of agroforestry. You don't have to plant inside.
Exactly. But the fashion nowadays is more about planting trees inside the plot, which is probably very good. But sometimes we try to think about this. It means first think where you come from, what you can do. And okay, maybe it's too difficult for you to do agroforestry in the official way, but then probably you can do other actions that goes in the same direction. and you will have more trees and you will have more biodiversity and your landscape will be better. And probably you will have results about frost and heat reduction. But those results are not very sure today, because we work also with researchers. We have some links and a network going with Institut Français, the French Institute for Wine and Viticulture. And they have some plots planted in agroforestry. But the main problem is that the trees are growing quite low and quite at low speed. And we need time to have real results about the effects. We know it's probably good, but if you want to convince people to dedicate time and money to do this, you have to have real data. And that's a bit of the problem today.
Indeed. Mathieu told us that his trees were about this tall.
Yes.
Do you know examples? Do you have examples in your network of farmers whose trees are a bit taller?
Yes, we have. It's more in the south part of France, but some have trees that are 15 years old. So they're a bit bigger than that. But even with this, those plots have been followed by the researcher for sometimes 10 years. But it's hard to say if the effect you see is really related to the trees you planted. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, the weather is not the same each year. The insects problems are not the same each year. So you have to have a very long, long period of data to be able to compare.
Now, agroforestry has been working for quite a while now across hundreds of different commodities. Do you sometimes find that the work that has been done on other crops, on other perennial crops or on other annual crops, is a useful indication that you can apply in viticulture, or is the milieu too conservative for that and you really wait for results from viticultural research itself to be available to spread agroforestry within that world?
No, I think there is a lot of information that we use coming from other sectors, crops and mainly fruit also, because from the fruit industry has different problems because they have trees already, but they have permanent culture. And that's very interesting for us. So we work, there are many fruit growers in France and in different regions. So we try to work with them because I would say they have 5 or 10 years advance about working with biodiversity, because they have more insects problems than we have in the wine sector. So we try to work with them, but there are always specific things and also the fact that you don't want to change completely your microclimate, because then you might have other problems with the wine. So I think it's very interesting. And the idea that we try to have in the TerraVity certification is to have a network of people going into agroforestry or different methods and see how they can work together and to try to solve the questions they have. For instance, what do you plant? Do you plant today local species? We work with different institute about who are trying to have local seeds from local origins. But then when you think about this with climate change, maybe tomorrow it's not the most adapted species. And it's there are many questions. It doesn't mean that you don't do anything. It means that you have to think collectively and try to find the answers step by step. And maybe the solution you choose will not be the good ones. And it will just be useful for the next ones, next generations.
Indeed. But that, of course, is a problem in an industry where, at least from the grower's perspective, making money is not always easy. And investing in planting trees, not knowing what the return is going to be, or even worse, getting a negative return on that investment, is going to be difficult for many farmers to manage. Etel, one thing that you did in the cocoa industry, which was so useful, was to do the heavy lifting of doing the whole bibliographic research. and making that available to interested parties through a single document, which has over 500 scientific papers in it, I believe. Do you think that in viticulture, something similar could take place? And now, if you'll excuse me, I need to show.
I was going to say that actually I've just pasted in the chat, because great minds think alike, the giant electronic library that I created with the Smithsonian, which is, as many of you know, one of the most important institutions in America and very specialized in agroforestry for coffee, but slightly less famous, nonetheless equally wonderful, is their work on agroforestry cocoa. And what we did is we broke through the silos of language barriers and exchanges from very sort of siloed national organizations and brought all the knowledge about cocoa agroforestry together in a one-stop shop where companies and activists and journalists and researchers can see everything that's out there. And I think the wine industry desperately needs this, because actually, to your point, you know, what you were saying about Deravitis bringing together researchers in France is so incredible. But I would say there's a vast treasure trove of information already available from top-notch scientific researchers around the world, Argentina, California, New Zealand. You know, I've started to make a library actually in my spare time. It's a little hobby for agroforestry wine. And what's incredible is there's already the research on what's the best practice, what to plant, when to plant it, what are the benefits of a hedge. You know, Patrick, you were talking about hedges versus trees in rows versus trees in islands. All of those are agroforestry, but what are the pros and cons of doing them different ways for different types of vines at different altitudes? You know, many people who are even specialists in agroforestry in, say, Bordeaux, don't know what the Californians are doing necessarily. And there's language barriers that I think we could unravel with a big concerted push, maybe through SWR. But, you know, you'll talk to somebody who knows, okay, agroforestry stops the terrible winds that desiccate grapes, right? And the wind often drives dust, and we know that dust contributes to mite outbreaks. But you would have other people who've never heard of that. All they know about is another second benefit, which is that heat waves leave the grapes too jammy and too sweet, and it destroys the quality of the grapes for wine and when you have a heat wave. And other people are interested in frost, and they've studied how frost can be mitigated because of the radiative effects of trees. And so the bud break problems are deeply studied by some people. And then, you know, basically vineyard agroforestry systems can give you higher quality must, lower alcohol, higher acidity, better bricks, better density. If you have geese in your agroforestry system, it can reduce the copper in the soil, because the way that the geese poop and the way that the geese graze is really great for wine. But, you know, someone who's not studying geese in agroforestry wine systems might only know about the frost and the heat and the acidity, you know. So basically, I think the data is there. Different people have done fantastic research. What we now need is to bring it all together and to all benefit from it together, to make it easily digestible for people who are running vineyards who don't have like 500 million spare hours to research this, who need it in an easy, accessible package.
Mathieu, would that be helpful as you are planning your agroforestry system? I mean, LVMH is a big gorilla in the corporate jungle. It has the resources to do its own research. Do you feel that you have enough of that research at your fingertips, irrespective of where it comes from? Or would the kind of project that Etel is talking about be helpful in your context as well?
It would be super useful, because even if you have all the money in the world, it doesn't buy you time. And those type of research, they take time. And each estate, each terroir will have its own particularities. And what works here at Château Galopet in south of France is not going to work in Blenheim and Marlborough in New Zealand, because the terroir is not the same, the plants are not the same. So it's always quite ad hoc trials. It's not really research, it's more like developments and trials. the first thing we started to do here was to ask around neighbors, because once again, we are brand new here, and we asked around who people who have been doing agroforestry and cover crop for some years. Okay, what did work here in the terroir of Provence? What did not work? We did some observations as well, clearly seeing that the oaks that we have on the estates is never surrounded too closely by the vines. You almost can see the roots of the oaks, and the vines is really not going there because clearly they are not friends. And we saw that on other type of trees like the figs, les tilleuls, there seems to be more friendship there. One way that I know of to the INRA, the sort of French Agronomic Research Institute in Dijon, they are doing some very interesting trials with planting in one long box on one end vine, on the other end different species of trees, and they have a divider in the between, and they will see what types of roots and mycelium is actually mingling in the between. And from that, when there is a lot of mingling, they would say, fantastic, it's a match. And if not, they would not advise to plant those trees there. And okay. I just want to piggyback on the point of the climate change. What we are doing here at Château Galopet is to mainly focus on local species, but we also plant between 5 to 10% of species which are not from here today, but which today grow in the climates which will be, according to the forecasts to the models, which will be the climate of Provence in 30 years. That's going to be a pistachio, for instance. So those trees will come from south of Spain or even North Africa. We have no idea what a pistachio and a cépage from north of France is going to do in the future, but we have to try. And plus, when you plant a hedge, you plant quite a lot, so you know that there will be a big mortality anyway, and I guess it's going to be a bit of natural selection as well. What is a good friend with the vine is going to grow quite a lot. What is not is not is going to stay like that and never develop.
And never grow, right. Nicola, would you agree? I mean, would you say that do you also have access to a lot of research, or is a lot of it inaccessible to your clients simply because of the language barrier, or to the fact that the climates are too different, or that the production systems are too different?
I would say that the main problem, as Mathieu said, is the time. You don't have time to compulse everything, and the language problem, if it's in English, you know, my English is not perfect, but perfect. I still understand mostly what I read. And anyway,
that of 99% of Frenchmen, Nicolas, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's the terroir. I think it's the time that you need. And it's true that most of the research are done 2, 3, or 4 times the same in different parts of the world. It could be interesting too, because you have confirmation or the difference that shows. But if we can have what you did for cocoa, it could be very interesting and on a synthetic way. And the main thing also that is important for me is that it's not just only to do agroforestry. The idea is, if you want to improve really your vineyard, you have to think globally. You do agroforestry, but if you do really bad practices around or on the other plots, because most of the time they don't plant trees in everywhere, they try to start with one plot or 2 or 3 plots. It's good, but it's not so interesting. So it's very important that the growers will think globally and say, okay, my goal is to, for instance, about biodiversity or about water consumption and the soil enhancement. You want to do agroforestry, but also maybe green manure. And you want to have maybe the bird nets that you implant everywhere because it's good. We have a program also in Terra Vitis with nests that we implant for bats because we know that the bats are eating quite a lot of pests. And it's quite successful. We work with a museum also that is specialized in this subject. And it has to be a combination of different methods.
Yeah.
Agroforestry is very good to show, and it's easy to explain because you see it very rapidly when you see the vineyards. But I think it's fashionable today. The risk is that it will be the fashion today, and in 10 years, we will switch to something else, because we don't have to forget that communication is a big plays a big part in this
Indeed, but there I would give you two rebuttals. The first is that because trees take such a damn long time to grow, in 10 years' time they'll only begin to get to the size that you want them to have. You're unlikely to get rid of them then. Secondly, we are savanna animals ourselves. We grew up in environments that were grasslands with trees. We like trees. That's why everywhere on the planet, the rich neighborhoods are filled with trees. So the likelihood that the trees would become a negative in your production system and your marketing system is very, very, very slight. But let me ask you a question, Nicolas. You operate as as an organization that brings together a lot of different producers. How widespread is the idea of agroforestry becoming amongst your producers? Is it still only a few pioneers or a few hippies? Or is it becoming the broader grand number of players that are interested in it and beginning to plant trees in their vineyards?
I think the interest is quite large, but the real application is much lower, because once again, the problems that you have to tackle, especially if you're a family-owned business, and I mean family-sized, it means that you have so many things. Like today, it's a big world just to have the bottles to bottle your wine. So agroforestry might be on your list, but sometimes it goes a bit lower in the list.
Are you telling me that it's actually difficult to get the bottles these days?
Yes. It's difficult to get the bottles. It's difficult to get the workers. It's difficult to have the time. It's difficult sometimes to sell your wine. Well, now it's quite okay for this, but... so it's a big list of problems that you have to solve every day. I mean, it's not special for when the wine business, but the thing is that when you are two or three people on 20 or 30 hectares, you don't have a lot of time for the long-term projects. And that's one of the main problems that we try to solve by working collectively. But if you have these projects and it costs a bit. It costs because you have to take rows away and you have to wait a long time before the positive aspects will be counting. You can count them, yeah.
Etel.
I was going to flag something for all of us and also kind of ask a question to Nicolas and Mathieu. When I try to push the cocoa industry and the palm oil industry and the rubber industry at scale to roll out millions of hectares of agroforestry and transition from monoculture to really robust agroforestry, the number one thing stopping people was fear, fear of doing something new and fear of having a yield loss. And I imagine, but I would love to know your thoughts, Mathieu and Nicolas, do you feel that the number one obstacle is people being afraid that they're going to lose yield? Because I do sort of surmise that might be the case. And we know from all these wonderful studies by like Emily Bourgade and Alonso Ugaglia and other research that actually, if you do your agroforestry in the vineyard right, you don't lose yield. But there's so much fear about that, and also people who do agroforestry wrong and then feel very angry and upset that, it didn't work out for them and their yield plummeted. I wonder, what are your thoughts on this fear and this question of yield and also about how to overcome it? How can we help people absorb the information they need to do agroforestry right so that they don't lose their yield?
If I can start, the yield is definitely not a fear for me. In terms of kilograms of grape per unit of vine, there is definitely a loss because of the loss of surface. Because once again, when we plant a hedge, that's so many vines that we're losing. So we are going to lose production, definitely. But the remaining vines are not going to produce less. That's also because within the appellation d'origine protégée, the yields are quite low anyway. You know, we are not running a type of crop where you want to maximize the yield, and maybe with the agroforestry, you might trip a little bit from the max, top max that you could get. We are very low anyway, and we are not going to see, once again, if it's run properly, we are not going to see an effect there.
Mm. Nicolas?
I would say the same about the yield, and I don't think it's the main problem. Unfortunately, most of the years, they don't even reach the maximum yield allowed in the appellation because of frost, because of droughts, because of many problems, and especially frost in many regions the last years, because we don't have winters, or barely we have a few days of winter, so the wine will start earlier, and then you can still have frost. So they lose quite a lot of yields from this. I still think the main problem is the time, and also something we didn't discuss is the age, because a lot of people are getting old, and they are not so far from retirement, even if in France it's going further and further, but it's a different debate. Anyway, it's much difficult to change your system, especially with something that will be effective in 15 or 20 years, when you are 5 years or 10 years from retirement and you don't have anyone after you. So you might try to sell your...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're going to be finishing very soon.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the wider debate of how we deal with agriculture generally, because across agricultural production systems, most farmers are old and close to retirement. And that doesn't just make them more inflexible, but it also makes it more difficult for the youngsters to come on board. The price of land has gone through.
Exactly.
So it's very, very difficult for a young farmer, irrespective of the crop or the commodity that they want to specialize in, to get started. And I'm pretty sure that we're not going to find an answer to that particular conundrum in the 1 minute and 52 seconds left to us. But what we do have time for is for each of you to give us your parting thoughts and to identify the three most important things that you think need to be done in order to promote the resilience boosting effects of agroforestry within wine growing regions. And ladies, first, I'll start with you, Etel. What are the three most important things we need to do?
I think we need to circle the wagons to get all the information, the data, the research, the science, and package it in an easy, accessible way for wine growers around the world. So combine, collect, and we're stronger together. You know, teamwork is the dream work. The second thing, and I'll only do two, actually, not three, is that wine growers don't yet realize their full power. But if enough wine growers through SWR, for example, did a very intensive political lobbying for the US Farm Bill and the European farm regulation to that currently do not reward agroforestry vineyards, if there was a strong lobby to just include a sort of tax rebate or an incentive, then I think you could get big money from big jurisdictions for big positive change. And that's what we need. We need to unlock change at scale. So those are only two things.
Oh, the two things, a dumbest guide to agroforestry and winemaking, and good incentives from the public bodies to encourage the planting of trees in viticulture. Nicola, what about you? Your two or three things that need to change to encourage the adoption of agroforestry in winemaking.
Yeah, I agree with what Ethel said. And I would add, so it will be three, but with two people, I would show how simple it can be and how simple you can do it, how you can adapt the theory to your vineyards, and especially show the time it will take you. Because one of the questions is also, how long will it take me to maintain the trees?
So more examples, pictures, videos, interviews with farmers doing agroforestry viticulture in California, in Argentina, New Zealand, in Germany.
Yeah. Yes, right. And also from your neighbor, because
and from your neighbor.
Argentina, you will think, I don't have, California, I don't have anything against, of course, but you will think, oh, it's far away, it's very different.
I would love to have an agroforestry winemaker as a neighbor, but sadly I don't. And yes. If I don't, the next best thing is that I'm Argentinian, isn't it? Mathieu, what about you? We already know we need a guide. We already know we need incentives from the public sector. We already know we need examples that our farmers can relate to. What about you?
One thing I could add would be real-time measurements of biodiversity to really see model of behavior to do a model of the effect. One thing that that we start to try to work on is the birds, you know, to have constant 24/7 recordings of the birds, because we can see from my 3.5 years here that there are more birds today than before. But it's just an observation, you know. If we had a sound system recording the type of bird, you could see, you could monitor with the artificial intelligence the species, the number of individuals, and really display a spike in biodiversity. Because if there are birds, there are insects. If there are insects, there are food for them. Because they are on top of the food chain, and that's really a constant monitoring. That we lack of today, I think.
I think that's an extraordinarily important point. We have tools now that allow us to do this monitoring in a cheaper way, but we nevertheless need a lot more research into these systems and on how to optimize them and in the benefits that they bring. So let 1,000 PhD students crawl all over the wine-growing regions of Europe. Let Etel put together that guide that we so desperately need. Let us find the producers that are already applying agroforestry, and they exist somewhere. Let us find them. Let us record them. Let us spread that through the networks like Terra Vitis, and let Mathieu convince the big players in LVMH to plant more trees in their other properties. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we are 3 minutes over time, but because the conference is an ongoing one and there is very little buffer, I'm afraid I'm going to have to bring this to a close. Let me thank you for having been fantastic participants. Let me share the sorrow that I'm sure we all feel at not having had more time to discuss what is an absolutely fascinating subject. And let us meet again in 5 years' time when Mathieu's trees will be this big and when he can begin to tell us what exactly that has done to the biodiversity at Château Galoupet. Enjoy your day. Bye-bye.